Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Van Hip, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is discuss the issues between rural and urban America. As this time continues to accelerate, where we are supposedly picking one of our, or no, we are not supposedly, we are picking our new leader. There is someone who has written a book that everyone who comments on that book talks about. This is what a new leader needs to be: understanding defense, understanding the new terrorism. And that is exactly the name of the book. Van Hip joining us today from Washington, D.C., former Deputy Secretary of the Army. And first of all, thank you for your service to this country and maintaining our freedom as a free nation, Van.
Well, thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Not that it's apples or oranges, but were you in the Army or the Navy?
I was in the Army, actually. I tell people about 30 years ago and 30 pounds ago, I was a training officer for drill sergeants. So the Army did it, and then worked at the Pentagon. But I did for a while, briefly, was a civilian in the Navy. Dick Cheney sent me over there to the General Counsel's office, but most of my time was both in uniform as well as serving as a civilian in the Army.
That's where I suppose I got a little confused because I read something about the Navy. So how many years did you serve in the Army?
Well, I was a Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for a little over three and a half years. I did that in the first Bush administration. And then toward the tail end, after they had the tail hook scandal, Cheney sent me over there as the Deputy General Counsel of the Navy. But I look back on it, he told me, so one day you'll appreciate it because very few people have had senior management experience in the Army and the Navy, and it did give me a very unique perspective.
Mm-hmm. And native of South Carolina?
No, the Navy was also the Pentagon.
No, I'm sorry, a native of South Carolina?
From Walterboro, South Carolina.
Walterboro, I'm sure everybody knows.
Country.
Yeah, everybody knows where that's at, right?
Yes, sir. Would it make good shrimp and grits?
So does that make you a Clemson fan?
I am very much a Clemson fan. Clemson's in the upstate, but my wife went to Clemson and my daughter went to Clemson, so we are a big Clemson family, and we got a good game coming up Saturday against North Carolina State.
Do you know why I'm so happy that Clemson did well this past year in the football season?
Why is that?
Because prior to 2015, your only claim to fame was beating Nebraska in that national championship game. And now I go walk across the Clemson campus, I see you still bragging about it 30 years later. So I'm glad you finally got something new to talk about.
I remember that game. Homer Jordan was the quarterback.
Okay, I don't remember that part.
All right.
So that's the fun. And I will just say this. I say it every time. Clemson is the most underrated land-grant university in this country. They do so much phenomenal work, and because you're just kind of not in the middle of anywhere, it gets left out of the mix. But I love that school and the work and the research that continue to come out of there.
I appreciate it. It is a great land-grant school, and a great, very good friend of mine is the dean of the Ag School, and they do an awful lot.
Yeah. So you took your years serving our country and put that into a compelling book. Tell us about the new terrorism and how that relates to where we are today in the nation.
Well, what we do is, I had always wanted to write a book, and a buddy of mine who had actually worked for Ronald Reagan said, you know, and I have for years, I've written articles and done a number of conferences on the link between Iran and North Korea, things like that. And he said, you know, we have plenty of books like that. What we don't have and what we need, and your background, you can do is a book that looks at really the threats to the country, the totality of the threats, and the things that we need to do to keep the country safe. And so that's why we did it. We began by taking a look at the history of radical Islam, so it's important to understand it, and then look at the threats from cyber to bio, border security, the full gamut, and the things that we need to do to keep the country safe. And I tell people it's a much more dangerous world today than it was the day after 9/11, and one of the main reasons is that technology is changing so rapidly, and yet our government is so stovepiped and lacks the ability to adapt and move quick enough. So as the technologies increase and change, the threats are really increasing exponentially. So it's a much more dangerous world today.
We'll get into more of that, but I'm of the mindset that too many times, particularly in a campaign season, we throw radical Islam and ISIS out there as a term because people obviously remember 9/11. They know what happens on a day-to-day basis. I'm convinced that the greatest threat to real terrorism that's going to affect me is on my own soil, not coming out of the Middle East.
No, you're right, but they're here. And we've got the FBI director, and we talk about this in my book, the FBI director before this guy actually testified to Congress a few years ago and said that I think it was like the year 2012, 59,000 people from countries other than Mexico, including Yemen and Pakistan and Syria and Iran, were caught illegally coming to this country. Where were the ones we did? And let me tell you, they weren't trying to come here as part of a church mission outreach program.
Right.
They come here to do harm to this country. So where are the ones we haven't been catching? Where are they today in America? So they know how to get here. That's why securing the border of this, the borders is such a vital issue. The bad guys know how to come into this country, and it's easy for them to.
In your mind, is that priority one when it comes to fighting terrorism, is securing the borders?
Absolutely. I really believe it is. And it's a combination of things. Our cyber security, our cyber systems, we are so weak and so vulnerable. I call it the fifth dimension of warfare. But you need to understand what the Chinese do versus what the Islamists do. One's about sabotage, the other's about espionage. But, I mean, the Chinese are trying to steal everything we've got in terms of intellectual property, and it's costing businesses hundreds of millions, not billions of dollars, on intellectual property. They've hacked into the Pentagon. The Islamists are trying to take down systems. Remember about a year or so ago, wasn't a coincidence, I believe, that you had the Wall Street Journal was hacked into, Stock Exchange, and United Airlines, all within like a 24-hour period. So it's a, and how about the other hacks that we had into the Office of Personnel Management, all the records and Social Security records of our government employees. It's a very, very dangerous world, changing so quickly. And the truth is, we just don't have the cybersecurity experts that we need in this country. And I looked at this pretty hard, and most experts say we need about 30,000 true cybersecurity experts in America. We maybe only have 1,000, maybe 2,000 max. So I call for the establishment of national security scholarships on our college campuses and universities. Let's recruit the best minds and get these kids to go into data security, computer security. Let's recruit the best talent right here at home to protect this country.
Well, it only makes sense. I mean, I'm reluctant anymore. I never was a big fan of it, but I've done it maybe three or four times, putting my credit card online to pay for something.
Yeah.
And it's a daily occurrence where somebody's hacking somebody's email or some other issue where I'm pretty sure that anything that's out there in the cyber world can be acquired, whether it's a national security issue or your banking information.
Oh, that's right. And here's the thing. As you do that, more and more people put data out there. There's more and more, and it's tougher and tougher to get it when you need it and to get it. Let me give you an example. A lot of our folks in the intelligence community and elsewhere, when they're trying to search something, they're going to Google. Well, Google doesn't give you everything that's out there. There's a lot more open source information that we aren't getting. And I'll give you an example. I was the first person in the United States to reveal in 2012 that the Iranians were on the ground in North Korea, helping them with their missile test and a nuclear test. Went on Google, you can't find it. How did I do it? I went to Europe, went to a university there that had much more sophisticated search engines, and we searched in Farsi. It was all in local Iranian newspapers, pictures of them on the ground helping the North Koreans. So we need to be doing those kinds of things and have much more. Our intelligence and law enforcement, we need to be using much more sophisticated search engines than just Google.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you opened up a whole new can of worms, but that's the reason that we have you on the air today, Van Hipp. I appreciate that. And I used Google a lot until this week. They did not have a picture of Christopher Columbus on Columbus Day. Google's off my radar screen. Van Hipp, you don't need to comment on that. The author of The New Terrorism. We'll take a break. We'll come back and talk maybe about the Tigers or about national security. Take a chance. We'll be back with more after this.
Now let's take a look at what's happening in the world of marketing cattle the superior way. No video sale this week. Next Friday there will be a video sale, and I want to remind you about the November 17th. Now that's less than a month away. The November 17th Superior Select Female Sale. Known genetics. As our margins have gotten tighter, it's important that we know exactly what the genetics that we have are capable of, because we cannot afford a mistake. That's why you need to work with the folks and the rep with Superior Livestock to minimize the mistakes. It's all about minimizing mistakes. Market your cattle the superior way. www.superiorlivestock.com.
Welcome back to Rural Route. I'm Trent Lewis alongside Van Hipp joining us. He's from South Carolina. Happens to be in the... I was going to come up with some adjective that I don't need to use. Washington, D.C., the nation's capital. Before we get back to cyber terrorism and the new terrorism with the author Van Hipp and former Deputy Secretary of the Army, I'm part of a group called the All-American Beef Battalion, Van, where in the past 9 years we have traveled this country and fed 350,000 individuals a one-pound ribeye. Cheesy potatoes, corn, a dinner roll, and a dessert. And one of our frequent places that we're asked to come and say thank you, which we've done twice, over 5,000 in a brigade upon deployment to Iraq or Afghanistan. I was walking around the commissary just asking people just random questions. These are soldiers, and so I don't have their names because they were just like quick sound bites. So this gentleman, I went up there and I said something to him. What did you think of the All-American Beef Battalion steak? And he went on about how wonderful the steak was. And then before I could even say anything else or take the microphone away, and he said, and I got to say, go Tigers, Clemson all the way. Okay, now that was in August before the season really got started. And then it was like almost as it was, and I was playing that clip, you know, throughout the course of the year. And then all of a sudden, people that listen are from the Clemson, South Carolina area. They're like, hey, that was pretty pretty visionary. That was like a crystal ball moment. And I said, well, I wish I knew who the guy was. I was just talking to random people at Fort Carson. So there's my Clemson story.
And so the guy was a Army soldier, right?
Soldier. He's in the Big Dog Brigade. I don't remember what... I don't remember the numbers, sorry. But, he's in the Army, and that was after he went to Clemson.
Because, you know, Clemson used to be, I tell you a quick great story. Clemson has a great Army ROTC program, and they actually used to be an all-male military school up until, like, probably the mid or early 50s. Mm-hmm. We had a big training camp there of World War II, not far from there. And that's where Henry Kissinger did his military training, became an American citizen. And he actually spent some time at Clemson.
I did not know that. I didn't know it started as a military all-male school.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Very much like Texas A&M.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So was it Clemson A&M in the early days?
I don't know. I think, I'm not sure of that. But it was, I think it was just always Clemson.
All right. Well, that's interesting stuff. Maybe we'll get back to that. But the new terrorism... Is that, and we're talking about the book that Van Hipp authored, is that it, in a nutshell, the cyber terrorism threat that we live under daily?
Well, it's a combination of things. And, I mean, look at the, one of the things like I said, the cyber threat, I think, is the one threat we are probably the most unprepared for as a nation. And we come up with recommendations, things we need to do, but so many other things too. For example, you know, people always talk about missile defense. I got to tell you, when I was doing the research for my book, I was shocked to learn that we have no land-based missile defense capability on the entire East Coast of the United States. And I would have thought that, but we don't. And that's, I think, one of the first things that the new president is going to have to address. Of course, we've got it on the West Coast, and you know, there was a time when President Obama, tried to cut back on some of our missile silos there at Fort Greeley, which were so important to deal with the North Korean threat. It's a combination of things. You've got to, there's no one magic bullet. It's a combination of things you've got to do. And we've got to rebuild the military. I don't know if you saw General Odierno's exit interview before he left as the Chief of Staff of the Army. It was one of Fox News with Jennifer Griffin, and she asked him a question. Did the President of the United States ever one time meet with you one-on-one? This is the Chief of Staff, the top general of the United States Army, four-year term, and the guy had to admit not one time did he ever meet with the President. That's disturbing.
As I indicated, we've been on bases, Army, Marines, Camp Pendleton, Fort Bliss, Fort Carson, Fort Lewis. And I can tell you this, Van, that in the 9 years that we've been going on these bases and just simply saying thank you with a meal, the morale over that nine-year period of time has deteriorated unbelievably, and it all comes from the lack of respect the individuals in the military get from their commander-in-chief.
It's sad. It's sad because, it has been decimated. Our Army today is, you got to go back to pre-World War II to see a military that's been at this level. People talk about, we're spending too much on military. No, we're not. Look at what we're spending for national security today in terms of real dollars and looking at the percentage of our GNP versus what we did 60 years ago. So 1960, 52% of all federal spending was for national security. Today it's down to 16%. And I would argue the reason we even have, Trent, a federal government in the first place, the reason the states came together was for one main reason, to provide for the common defense of the American people, to protect us. That's why we have a federal government. So I think we need to get our priorities right.
We could probably spend the rest of the time talking about why it's been decimated, but I think it's more productive to talk about what does it take to repair it. First of all, it matters who's elected, correct?
Absolutely, and it's important to have a commander-in-chief I think it was Ronald Reagan said it best. He said, personnel is policy. You want someone who's going to surround himself with the right people. A president can't do everything, but a president needs to be someone who surrounds himself with the very best in security and in science and in business and you name it. That's what a great president does. That's pretty much what Ronald Reagan did.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, but for a moment, let me play devil's advocate.
Okay.
Just for the purpose of thinking like everybody who's thinking. Van Hipp, you just told us that the threats today are very different than they were, let's say, Desert Storm time or certainly World War II time. So why should we have the same defense that we had in that period of time? Maybe we need to change the military, change the intelligence, because it's more of a cyber defense than it's ever been.
Well, largely, I would say I would agree with a lot of that. We've got to adapt. So how we fight today, I mean, a Cold War mentality won't win the next war. So we'd have to be, we have to adapt. We are doing some things in the cyber realm. We've stood up a new cyber command. The Air Force, I will tell you, is probably doing more ahead of this than any other service. They've got a test bed out in Colorado called CyberWorks where they're testing the latest cyber defense types of technologies. They're getting ahead of it more than the other services. But those are the kinds of things we've got to do to think outside the box. But we've still got to have, at the end of the day, you win wars with that grunt on the ground. You can't do it all with air power and special forces. We will always have to have that grunt on the ground to finish the job.
I was a high school kid when Ronald Reagan was elected president in 1980, and I remember so many people saying, oh, I'm afraid of Reagan because he's a warmonger. He's going to get us into a war. He's going to build our military and our presence. Quite frankly, has there been a time when we had less international war that we were involved with than during the 8 years Ronald Reagan was president? Because it's one big thing. It's a deterrent to mess with us. Am I wrong?
Strength brings peace. And I think that was his old saying, peace peace through strength. The bad guys and the thugs of the world, the one thing they understand is strength. And when you send messages that imply or show weakness, then you're in my trouble. I would say look at Putin right now and go back and look at some of the things that he has done in recent years. When our president went to Brussels and said the country of Georgia is not presently on a pathway to NATO membership after we had supported them since 2005, and we announced massive troop cuts. We announced that Eastern Europe would not get the kind of missile defense systems that we had told them that they would get. Then all of a sudden he goes into Crimea. He starts doing all these other things, and we're surprised? No. He's just an old KGB agent posing as the president of Russia. But when he sees weakness and those kinds of signals, he's going to take advantage of them. So the way you deal with people like that is from a position of strength.
Former Deputy Secretary of the Army Van Hipp, our guest. He authored the book, The New Terrorism. We'll take a break and continue with Information Wars after this.
I did mention it briefly, but I want to tell you more. StakesForTroops.com is the place to get more information and to become involved in this great endeavor. A group of Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas farmers, ranchers decided that we need to say thank you. Bill Brody's vision is coming true to say thank you to all of those who continue to risk their lives to protect our freedom. 100% of the money goes to the donations, goes to the cause, $0 for administration. That's just another reason to say, yes, I want to help the All-American Beef Battalion. Details at StakesForTroops.com.
Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce. Van Hipp, who I learned during the break has a cat fetish, author of The New Terrorism. You know what I mean by that?
Cat. No, I don't.
Well,
oh, yeah, yeah,
Clemson
the wildcat.
Tigers. You're a Clemson Tiger fan at heart. You don't come to Cornhusker country. You go to Power Cat country in Manhattan a couple of weeks ago. We got to get you out of this cat fetish.
That's right. And y'all doing pretty good this year.
Yeah, we're undefeated.
I
don't keep track of NIAA schools like Kansas State, so I don't know how they're doing. We have a lot of Kansas listeners, as you might tell, and they're not UK fans, or KU fans, excuse me. Okay, enough of the sports. I see something developing, and you touched on it, and I'm not some visionary. I mean, you just have to be paying attention to see this, but for 2016, I've seen up close and personal major media and their selective portrayal of the truth. And it's happening with the current presidential campaign in a way that I thought could never happen in 2016, in that we only get access to the information that the media wants us to have unless you seek an alternative route. You referenced that when you're talking about North Korea. And with everybody turning to one search engine, and those search engines being totally based around algorithms, the American people, you have to work at getting the whole story. If you just sit here and take what's been given to you, you're going to have a pretty warped sense of what's actually happening.
You're exactly right, and it's really scary. I mean, in the mainstream media, I tell people it's really the fourth branch of the government. But unlike the other three branches, there's no accountability. And the WikiLeaks stuff that's coming out is very damning, and it's very it's sad. It kind of confirms what we all thought. I mean, they've been in cahoots with each other, and they've got their own agenda, and they want to spoon feed the American public whatever of their propaganda of the week is. So it's very concerning. I think the founding fathers would be turning in their graves.
Yeah, absolutely. I know they are. Along with my grandfather, born in 1918. I've experienced this because first, I think, when I really saw it, for 5 years in a row, I spoke in Australia. This will be the first year I've missed in the past 6 years. But when I'm in Australia, I hear U.S. media blaring loudly into Australia, and I hear the same thing in Canada. When I travel there, I travel to Ireland, I heard the same thing. And, Van, I never hear a balanced view. I hear the most liberal messages that come out of this country going into those other countries. And I was at a dairy meeting in South Australia, and the dairymen who think like you and I, who think in a conservative way, were so happy that we were good with our new health care program. He said, it's good. I'm glad you guys like that. I said, who told you we like that? And he said, well, I hear on the media that it's just the most popular thing that's ever happened in the U.S. Yeah. I said, dude, you got to get a different source.
Yeah. No, you're so right, Trent. I mean, I can remember several years ago in Europe, same thing. And I'm watching the news and watching over in America and what they're showing people there. My gosh, no wonder we got problems with allies abroad if they think we think some of the things that we do, that you know, that they're saying. And even like, for example, CNN International, I saw some of the stuff they were putting out of there. I said, my gosh, they wouldn't dare show that back in the
United States.
I mean, my gosh. But I'm with you 100%. I've experienced it too.
So how does that factor into the new terrorism, the theme of the day?
Well, it gets one. I have a whole chapter where I call for more open source intelligence. There's so much stuff you're staring us in the face. That we're not getting access to. I think one of the former Defense Intelligence Agency directors said, "We need fewer James Bonds and more Sherlock Holmes." There's so much stuff just staring us in the face, and 90% of our intelligence is actually open source. So I think we do need to use other search engines, and this problem is going to only get worse. Let me tell you, as there's more and more data out there, it'll be tougher and tougher to get. But thank goodness we've got. You know, people are going to websites like Drudge and other. We have other sources and mechanisms now to get our news. And things are happening so quickly. Newsmax is another good one. FoxNews.com. So thank goodness we've got so many other venues.
Roll out radio, right, man?
Amen. We got out today.
I was gonna. Oh, I didn't want to butt in. But I didn't want you to call me Tim Kaine, so I didn't butt in.
That's right.
But problem I have with your two analogies between James Bond and Sherlock Holmes is they're both British.
Is what now?
They're both British.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm quoting a U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency director.
Shouldn't we say James Bond or, who did Peter? Columbo. James Bond or Columbo?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be a better analogy?
There you go. I like that. He was good. Peter Falk, he was good.
Yeah, he was good. That's back when TV was actually worth watching. Where do we go from here? I mean, you and I can talk about this, but how do we make it come true? How do we make it come to fruition?
Well, people got to get involved. I think this is probably the most important election of our lifetime, you know, and I really mean that because, I mean, look what's happening with our borders. It's what's happening to our military, what's happening from a cyber security perspective. And we don't respect our law enforcement anymore. I heard Rudy Giuliani say it earlier this summer in a speech. He said, what happened to America? Where did it go? And that's why it's so important that people, what I call the forgotten Americans, you know, Richard Nixon, before he called them the silent majority, he called them the forgotten Americans. And I like that term even better because, you know, forgotten Americans are people who just want to raise their families right and they work and they pay taxes and they go to church and they love the country and they're always there when the country needs them, but their country has forgotten them and their country has let them down. And these people, the forgotten Americans, need to get involved and they need to come out and they need to be heard on election day.
Mm-hmm. But they need to be informed. Showing up and voting and checking for the person you've heard about most often is not what we need either. We need people to show up and vote after they've actually looked at what people stand for. Particularly, I'm huge on this, and I'd love to get your take on this, is the Constitution granted the power to the people locally, and the county sheriff is the ultimate authority in every county, and people don't know that. So when you go vote, it's more important you have the right county sheriff than the President of the United States, but don't just go check the one that you saw the most signs for.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, people need to be more informed, and unfortunately, so many people aren't. It's just, you know, I mean, it's all about, that's why all these TV commercials are all, it's about 30 seconds,
mm-hmm.
and people need to spend more than 30 seconds in looking at the issues that are facing them. And you're right, our Constitution, I think it's the 10th Amendment, says all rights not expressly given to the federal government belong to the states. That's in our Constitution.
Yeah, it is. And I've had to share with two different county sheriffs in the past week what their constitutional rights were as a county sheriff, because the feds would like you to forget about that.
Well, yeah. I'll tell you a little, since you're talking about the sheriff, a little funny quirk in South Carolina. Well, this is how they used to keep all the non-South Carolinians out of South Carolina so they couldn't pass the bar exam. In our Constitution, there is one man in the county who can arrest the sheriff, and that's the coroner. So in South Carolina, everybody wants to run for coroner.
So who does the autopsy if the sheriff, if something happens there? Yeah, I've heard that the coroner has more powers in most counties than people realize.
Yeah, that's right. That's
so
right.
When did I didn't really research this because I didn't think about it. When did you publish, and when was the book available?
Book came out actually last February, actually last March, and we did the kickoff actually at the Richard Nixon Presidential Library. And people said, "Why didn't you want to do it there?" You know, sometimes you go to sleep and you wake up middle of the night and TV's on, and I actually saw they were doing a replay of the last interview that Richard Nixon gave to Larry King before he died. I want to think it was like early 1994. Mm-hmm. One of the last questions that Larry King asked him was, "Mr. President, as we approach the 21st century, what does Americans need to be most concerned with?" Nixon didn't bat an eye. He said, "The rise of Islamic fanaticism."
Really?
I got a chill up my spine. There was a president who knew foreign policy and was a visionary when it came to foreign affairs.
94, I don't think most people even thought about radical Islam.
Now, Richard Nixon was.
Huh. So the reason I ask you is when it came out, because I thought it had been some period of time. And
yes.
What's the response been like? How do people typically respond? Do they argue with you? Do they agree with you?
No, unfortunately, a lot of the things we've talked about are starting to come true. Mm-hmm. I talk about the need to remove nuclear weapons from Turkey because it's not a stable regime. We can't depend on Turkey. And, well, we saw what happened there last month. I talked about the need for us to work to get all the uranium out of the country of Niger because it's also not stable. And, of course, it can be used for nuclear weapons. And what's happened there? Boko Haram has begun border attacks around the country of Niger. So I think it's a lot of those kinds of things that things have happened. It's given us some credibility.
What, do you have a take on the uranium that we have in the Western United States and Russia's involvement in acquiring those holdings?
I know they're very much involved, and we do have something. We'll say this: we need to be more involved in the. Our Congress needs to be more involved. We have a program the Pentagon does have, and this is a good thing. Where we try to look at those rare earth minerals and other things that we need from a national security standpoint. And we specifically look at what the Russians and Chinese are doing and trying to get these things. And we need to be more concerned because you're right. It's not just here in this country, but they're trying to acquire rare earth materials and other things that we need from a national security standpoint. I think the Chinese have even bought interest in various mines and so forth in South America as well.
Van Hipp, my guest. The New Terrorism is the book he authored, former Deputy Secretary of the Army. We've got one more segment. We'll come back and do that after this.
Let me just say right off that I've proven women wrong. That's right. I can actually make the case that I've proven women wrong. How did I do that? Well, women have long said men cannot multitask, right? Well, it just so happens that I'm doing two things at one time. I'm feeding my sows while I'm having this conversation on the radio. I'm feeding my sows with the computer. The computerized electronic sow feeding system has simplified my life. Excuse me, has simplified Kelly's life because she's no longer carrying 5-gallon buckets. It's simple, it's reliable, and it works great. To get more details about the MPS Agri System, the modern technological way of moving into precise agriculture. It's not only about being simpler. It's about giving these sows exactly what they want and making sure they have no boss issues when it comes to their meal. www.mpsagra.co.uk. mpsagra.co.uk. www.cattlemarketingcatalogue.uk. It can be simply yours as well. Check it out today.
Welcome back to Rural Route. I'm Trent Luce. Van Hipp, our guest. The New Terrorism is the book he authored. And I don't know why, Van. I don't normally do this, but you have me coming back to some sporting college. I don't follow professional athletes at all. I think that particularly NFL players are big overpaid babies. I've made a statement to my wife. I'm not going to watch 1 minute of the NFL season this year. Just not going to do it. It doesn't interest me. I'm not going to do it. College athletics, though, that's a different deal.
Yep.
November 1889, Governor John Peter Richardson signed a bill accepting Clemson's gift. Thomas Green Clemson, a Philadelphia-born European educated engineer, musician, and artist who married John C. Calhoun's daughter, Anna Marie. They had a desire to teach people about agriculture. He left his home and fortune to the state of South Carolina to create what we now know as Clemson University, and it happened in 1889.
Yep, and he had a strong background, and he was actually the first administrator of what we call the Bureau of Agriculture Affairs in America, which became the Department of Agriculture. So had a real, someone who was a real father for the land-grant system in this country. He was a pioneer.
Yeah, absolutely. So the Morrill Act was 1862, so it would have been about that time. I think 64, it says here. That. Yeah. And then it was, I think we could win a lot of money even on the campus just in wagering the students. the students would not know that it started, and until 1955 was an all-male military.
I said mid to early 50. All right, yeah. Nice. I was close.
Yeah, you're spot on. I'm kind of mixed on this, and I want your take, because I engage in some social media, Facebook, Twitter, and I see a lot of anger, and I know that there's a lot of hate that festers there, and when riots are accelerating, it's Facebook, it's social media that builds that momentum towards hate and anger. But isn't there a positive way? Isn't there a way that we can use this largest coffee shop of the world to get people all on the same page to work for good?
I think there is, and that's something I've looked at for a long time, and let me tell you what I'm talking about. Trent, the government always tells us to be vigilant to fight terrorism. We can be more than vigilant. We can be actively involved. I'll tell you a story of how I got this idea. A friend of a friend's daughter was hiding in the bushes on that island in Norway where that guy, Anders Breivik, killed those 67, 68 kids. And he was so close to her, she could hear him breathing. She was hiding in the bushes. But she had her little mobile phone, and she was able to send out a tweet to the local people telling them what was going on. And the local people were able to get there to rescue those kids before law enforcement got there. That showed me the power of social media. Mm-hmm. And I began to think, how can we harness that to turn the tables on terrorists? And so, you know, we've got a national terrorism database with like over a million or so pictures and other data of suspected terrorists. Why not have a separate 911, a separate hotline, where if you see something suspicious on Facebook, you see something suspicious on Twitter, in real time, you could text a photo of that to that counterterrorism center and link him back at the state level to our emergency management directors. Let me tell you, we might be able to, number one, thwart a terrorist attack, or number two, certainly improve situational awareness during a terrorist attack. Those are kinds of, and to me, this is a no-brainer. And we can do it, and I have talked to people, emergency management directors at the local level. They would love to have this kind of capability.
The only concern I have about that, and I want you to put me at ease, is obviously 9/11. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows where they were at. Everybody knows the implications forever. Mm-hmm. And then George W. Bush passes laws. One was the Terrorism Act. There's another one I'm not thinking of the name of it. You're going to tell me in a minute. Where basically it makes information available easily in the name of curbing terrorism. Mm-hmm. And I can share with you case after case. In fact, one of them that we may or may not want to talk about that's happening right now, a federal trial in Portland, Oregon, where because of these laws passed to get access to terrorists more quickly, it's being used more often against U.S. citizens than it is against curbing terrorism. So it's really about where we ride that line between fighting terrorism and a right to privacy.
Yeah, I agree. And so, again, what I'm talking about is all open source stuff. So if somebody's putting something on Facebook or you're tweeting stuff out, you're sending it to the world anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Or remember like in San Bernardino where they saw these characters going in, very suspicious, and they were afraid to do anything because they didn't want to be accused of not being politically correct. And if someone had been able to take a photo of that, again, stuff all that's in the open, we might could have compared the photos with some of those people, the bad news characters we've got in that database. So, again, I'm talking all open source stuff, not invading people's privacy. But if you put something out on Facebook
right.
or you put something on Twitter, you don't have an intention to remain private.
That's correct. But what I'm more concerned about is individual communication. So I have friends that are not texting me right now because everything that we send can be accessed and is under surveillance by the FBI. We know that for a fact. In fact, we now know that there is one app you can load that has an encrypted text that cannot be accessed by the FBI or the federal government, but they are right now suing the company that makes that app available. Mm. And so, you know, and it sounds like I'm trying to harbor criminals, but that's not at all what it is. It's about invading the right to privacy. And the right to privacy, the minute you use your credit card, you somehow, you've given up some level of right to privacy.
Yeah.
And I don't think people realize that.
No, I agree with you. No. I say that. We've got to be very careful on that, particularly when bad people are running the government.
Well, we've got plenty of those. I don't know if I want to ask you this or not, but I guess I will. Your book, The New Terrorism, is all about a strong leader. Do we have that choice in 2016?
Well, I think we've got, as the WikiLeaks stuff comes out more and more, I don't think we have much of a choice. We do have a choice. I mean, I don't think you have much of a choice to stay home or anything like that. I think you've got to vote. And I go back to who's going to surround themselves with the best people. Mm-hmm. You've got a number of Medal of Honor winners who've endorsed Donald Trump. You've got a number of, I think it's like 200 generals. And I look at the generals who've endorsed him. These aren't the political generals. They're the military generals and the people that I serve with and I have a lot of respect for. There's a difference between the political generals and the military generals. And one of the things I got to tell you, I think that the reason I think why I probably want anything else, Trump is the Republican nominee today, is in the Republican Party as well as the current president. Both failed the American people to secure the borders of this country. We had a law in 2006, the Secure Fence Act. We did not enforce it. It was the law of the land. We did not enforce it. Had we enforced it, had we funded it, had we secured the borders, I doubt very seriously that Donald Trump would even be the Republican nominee today. So you got to give him credit for understanding that when the establishment and all the experts failed the American people on securing the borders of this country.
Securing the border, to me, is quite simple. It's not about enacting a bunch of new laws. It's about what you just said, enforcing the laws that are currently on the books.
That's right. That's right. And it's been since 2006. Duncan Hunter was the author of it. And that's one of the reasons why I supported him for president when he ran in 2008.
Van, I assume you know this, but my friends in Arizona tell me that between 20 and 25% of the illegals that are captured in Arizona already have a U.S. criminal record.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
It is. And let me tell you what I'm hearing, too. Where are they taking them to release them, to send them back to Mexico? To San Diego, Tijuana, along that where they did build the double fence. It works.
Yeah. We have 2 minutes. We've talked about the book. How do people get the book and any other insights into the book that might be compelling to our listeners?
Yeah, you can go to Amazon and get the book, or you can go to thenewterrorism.com. There's a link right there. Also, 100% of all proceeds are actually going for scholarships for the children of fallen guardsmen, and the National Guard Education Foundation is actually administering the scholarships, and they're not taking not one dime in administrative cost or fees. So it really is all going to these kids and to help them with their college education. So, and the National Guard Education Foundation is just it's a great organization, and I'm very honored to be working with them on this.
Yeah, I have to be honest, I did not know that either. That's putting your money where your mouth is, back to where we started when you're talking about the need to have more people that are in tune with what the true threats of this nation are.
And I'll be getting ready to go to November 3rd, looking forward. I'll be speaking at the Gerald Ford Presidential Library on what we talked about today, keeping America safe during these times.
Mm. When are you coming to Nebraska?
I got to get out there. It's been a long time. Now you got me interested. I got to get out there.
Well, Van, I'm sitting here in what I call the palace because Wyatt Earp went to Tombstone and bought the Oriental Palace. That's why I call it the palace. So that's where I broadcast from. But in front of the palace is a fire pit with empty chairs sitting around it. And in the month of May, there were six different countries represented in those chairs. You might as well come and represent South Carolina. Not indicating that South Carolina is a separate country, mind you, but we'd love to have you.
Well, people, and if you get down to Charleston, I think people in Charleston would view themselves as a separate country, but the rest of us not.
Van Hipp, my guest today, it has been very enlightening, and I look forward to working with you in the future. Find the book, The New Terrorism, former Deputy Secretary of the Army and a friend of the patriots of this country. Thanks, Van. I look forward to meeting you one day.
Thanks, I really enjoyed it.
We have successfully journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. Both Van Hipp and myself remind you that all roads do lead to a route, a rural route, in beautiful Lawrence County, South Carolina.
Now let's take a look at what's happening in the world of marketing cattle the superior way. No video sale this week. Next Friday there will be a video sale, and I want to remind you about the November 17th. Now that's less than a month away. The November 17th Superior Select Female Sale. Known genetics. As our margins have gotten tighter, it's important that we know exactly what the genetics that we have are capable of, because we cannot afford a mistake. That's why you need to work with the folks and the rep with Superior Livestock to minimize the mistakes. It's all about minimizing mistakes. Market your cattle the superior way. www.superiorlivestock.com.